chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make there in the middle of it. Rest make there in the middle. We are. Rest make there.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We just concluded our first hour with a very fine guest, Dr. James Vaughn out of the University of Texas, and he specializes in the British East India Company. I don't know how much you've thought about it over the years, but the British East India Company was founded in 1600 in England, and it had authority that was far exceeded the normal company. He describes it as one of the first international corporations or companies. And he gave just an amazing layout and explanation of the East India Company. It had extraordinary powers which were way over and aboard any other company up to that date. So it had its own armies, and it went all it traded into India. It traded into China. Some of the products that it traded, the nefarious opium dealings into China, destroyed China. So there were many people that are detractors of the British East India Company, but the British gained a great amount of power and money from their trading into India and into that area in China and so forth. Dr. Vaughn had just an extraordinary grasp. So if you're only listening to this second hour now, why don't you go back and listen to that first hour, because boy, that is a humdinger. We've gotten very good response to the last two articles that I've written and posted on thesecrettruth.com is our website. Again, that's thesecrettruth.com. You can you can email me, George, at thesecrettruth.com, or Charlotte at thesecrettruth.com, with your comments or contributions as far as knowledge goes or anything else. We have been on the air now nearly 7 years, and we're getting into certain areas now that we feel that we're not wanted in, you know. We're in areas now where we're getting pretty sensitive. We're getting feedback from people that don't want us on the air. But we're going to continue to broadcast, and The Secret Truth is the name of our program. And we feel that we're compelled to do this. America is in a really bad state right now, and we're trying to right this boat. We see a capsized boat out there, and that boat is about to sink. And so we've got to go grab hold of that boat and right that boat and try to make some sense out of this thing. When we're talking about trying to make sense out of something, we're talking about a grand scheme of mind washing, brain control here. The American public, much less the public at large in the world, are under certain influences. And they've been educated through higher education into thinking many of the similar things. So they have a predisposition to certain schools of thought. And those schools of thought don't do anything but continue this to mesmerize and to dilute them. Dr. Vaughn pointed out that, yes, one of the worst things that the British East India Company did was deal drugs into China, and they made that just a dreadful place, and they fed those addicts. The Chinese they responded with a couple of wars with the British. They were called the Opium Wars. And trying to fend off this intrusion or this opium dealing and trading into their country. But there was tremendous sums of money to be made by the British, and so they went to war twice to try to continue their opium dealings into China. China eventually had to establish a capital punishment for dealers and so forth, and even addicts, and to stop the trade. And that's what put a halt to it. When we look around America today, we see many, many similar things. We see addicts that are either on alcohol or drugs and so forth, and they're being rehabilitated as much as possible, but we have an epidemic here. Just look over south of the border and you see a tremendous business in drugs being conducted by the drug cartel, the Mexican drug cartels. But that they have to have users and consumers, and those consumers and users are in this country. What happened to this country? It took a long time for this country to become debased and to be morally deficient versus what it used to be. There are people out there that swear that, oh, we're freer now, we can think more, you know, different things, and we're not limited anymore about what we can delve into. They make the use of viewing of pornography a great, religious right almost, that we have a right to debase ourselves, you know. And you've got the political correctness crowd out there, and it's just like this recent a court case that concluded in Florida recently with George Zimmerman being acquitted. We have a tragic situation there. But we do have two men here. We have a young man, 17. He's not a young boy, by the way, but the press is calling him a young boy, and they're putting 12, 13-year-old pictures up there. So the press has done unconscionable things here. It's tragic, and we extend, Charlotte and I extend our condolences to Trayvon Martin's family, his mother and dad, and his extended family. And we certainly sad that they lost their son. George Zimmerman was acquitted. There were six women on the jury, and they finally came in, you know, with a verdict of not guilty. Jurors just recently was saying on CNN that, it came down to very simple things, the fight itself. If Trayvon Martin was on top, then, you know, George Zimmerman was on bottom, then who would normally, be yelling for help there? It has divided this country along ethnic lines. You have the blacks that are mad as hell, and I don't blame them to a large extent, because they have not been treated properly in this country. I mean, okay, they went to West Africa. They have slave trading. The Royal Company was established by the British, and they just imported the slaves into the Caribbean and into this country. It wasn't right. Slavery is not right. There is world slavery of all kinds of ethnic groups still going on throughout the world. So this experience and this history in America, no matter how diabolical it was and fallen and debased and hurtful against the blacks, was one area, and all over the world you have other kinds of slavery of other ethnic groups. We have a world now, a country, that since 9/11 has changed tremendously. We have this Pearl Harbor effect, and Americans are traumatized and upset about this attack on the World Trade Center. So they can be led around very easily by that dynamic. And whoever is right on this, whether it was an inside job or it was a legitimate attack by these terrorists, the effect is the same. It's taking America and locking it down. It's taking an America that in the 50s, when I grew up, was very free and a very beautiful place to grow up in, and a very, very safe place with a very, very low rate of crime. And since 9/11, our country has been transformed into, you know, a hellhole of security. People looking at all your emails. They're looking at your telephone calls, or at least the record of who you're calling, and so forth. And I maintain that actually, what's changing here is that in the 50s, after World War II, you had the John Birch Society that was formed, and they concentrated a great deal on the Federal Reserve and the private ownership of the Fed and so forth. So ever since the 50s, 63 years ago, you've had a tremendous number of people that have been able to start catching on to this money gamut, this hustle. And in seeing what the hustle was all about by the creation of money out of thin air and then charging the interest and then taking back your real goods for credit entries on a set of books, you know, foreclosing you out or repoing your car or whatever, the American public is beginning to wake up. But the problem here is an emotional one, where we can think so clearly at times, but then we have these things called the emotions that enter in at times and just overwhelm us and just cloud our minds and just overwhelm our logic and our reason and take us into a very angry state and a state of hatred. That's what I don't like about this Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. We need to start a process of healing. No matter who was wrong, if George Zimmerman shouldn't have pulled the pistol and shouldn't have confronted him, and Trayvon Martin shouldn't have been there or should have been there, he had a right to be there. Neither one it was described as doing anything before this tragic event occurred with the shooting, that neither one could describe as having done anything that was illegal on either side. But you have a tremendous division that has occurred out of this. And you have Jesse Jackson coming in from Chicago, and there are murders that have occurred by policemen of blacks, and those are the ones that we should have concentrated on. And I must say I need to pay more attention to these myself, and I have let the black community down myself, and I'm going to take a more interest in anything like that in the future. But there have been travesties of justice and the killing of blacks. And what this whole thing figures into, there was a couple recently, Jim and Joanne Moriarty, and they were trying to bring some kind of a semblance of balance and peace to Libya. And they were over there when the no-fly zone had been instituted, and they were trying to get out of there. And there was all hell breaking loose. And they recently have been on George Riley's The Power Hour and some others, Al Addis up in Dallas on his program, and several others. They're in the Dallas area now, and they will be out at a barbecue place. I'll have that address for you in just a few minutes. But it's out in Richardson, Texas. They'll be out there and a Monday night. And they intend to lecture, and they're going to describe their experiences over in Libya during that period of time. And they have a slide presentation. And then, of all people, Jerome Corsi is going to interact with them on a hookup, a Skype hookup. So it should prove to be a very, very interesting night up there in Richardson, Texas. And like I said, I'm looking for that address now, and we'll find that for you and give it out before the end of the program. But Jim and Joanne Moriarty experienced some very horrendously evil, you could say jihadist activity over there. And so as a result, they came back and they were trying to put this out, okay, through several venues, and they got some of it out. But some people, they tell a story about having Glenn Beck come in and interview them for 6 hours, and then later on turning the back on them and saying, look, we're drop it, you know. And so you know, we have the Benghazi scandal going on in addition to this, and then the Moriartys come in and start telling their story of all kinds of atrocities that occurred over there by these so-called jihadist rebels that were going to bring humanitarian peace and goodwill to Libya. But what really went on over there that I can discern after looking at it for a little while is that Muammar Gaddafi had actually been working with us on several levels. After 9/11, he worked with us on the rendition program, secret flights and imprisonment of so-called jihadists. So he cooperated there. He started becoming very ambitious in wanting to bring Africa together, see. And in trying to do that, I believe that he became very, very ambitious in this area. And when he became very ambitious to bring Africa together, I think the powers up there said, hey, we're not going to allow him to consolidate and unify and make Africa a continent and an organized, you could say, a continent with him being the leader of these African nations. So they started this concerted effort to topple him. Well, the best way was that to topple him and to come on with the story to the American public was he was committing atrocities over there against the people and humanitarian atrocities, and the UN had to come in and they just had to declare that this, we had to have regime change here, we had to have a no-fly zone over Libya, and because of Muammar Gaddafi's atrocities against the Libyan citizens. What streamed in there was all kinds of al-Qaeda groups and jihadist groups of all kinds. The essence, though, of the way that Libya has been governed is very unusual. There's approximately 138 to 140 tribes. Now, making up those tribes are clans, and some have estimated that there's up to, when you include tribes along with the clans, there may be altogether clans and tribes, and the clans make up some of the tribes, but they're pretty well generally accepted from most authorities and historians, that there's 138 to 140 tribes in Libya, or there were, you know, until this civil war or whatever. But making up those tribes were clans. So you have maybe six clans that made up the Gaddafi tribe, and then you have other, even larger tribes that were made up of more clans. So you have a governing mechanism there that's very tribal. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can overcome this tribal system that has endured for centuries, if not millenniums, in the Libyan area. So we're watching to see how that is going to unfold. Muammar Gaddafi had ambitions of creating a gold dinar, a gold-backed currency. He also wanted to stop paying, accepting dollars for his oil, and he was actually allowing in quite a large contingency of Chinese into the country. And these Chinese were beginning to mount into the thousands. Yeah, if you'll remember what happened during the Civil War over there when they began to evacuate and they began to see how serious the conflict was evolving into. If you'll remember, they evacuated at one time. The Chinese had to come in and evacuate somewhere upwards of about 37,000 Chinese from Libya that were primarily oil workers and other related workers that were working in Libya. I have friends that have written and traveled extensively in Northern Africa, and they tell me the same thing, is that the Chinese have come in there and are exploiting the natural resources of some of those African countries, and so they can buy up some of this leadership pretty easily, and then start extracting some of the oil and gas or whatever that they're looking for. China is on a growth spurt, and it's not going to slow down any. So as a result, they need all the natural resources they can get their hands on. So the Libyan move against Gaddafi was on several levels. And one of the primary levels was they did not want him to continue to bring Africa together. When I first got on to Africa, and really, and this is something I believe, those people that are still upset about Trayvon Martin, I don't blame you for being upset, and I sympathize with you. But there is something going on in Africa that you need to take note of. And being black, I think it's very, very important for you to take note of and begin to study some of these really big politics, because then you're going to see how you get caught up in a net down here on the lower level in our country called America. Africa has been planned to be taken down by the ultimate rich, the ultra wealthy. They're doing a job. They have imported into Africa all kinds of disease, AIDS, and everything else. So Africa is on the hit list by the ultra wealthy who consider the blacks to be animals. And so they're out to decimate and destroy the major populations in Africa. That's why Gaddafi's coming in here and trying to consolidate would bring strength to those African countries, and it would go against the major plan by the ultra wealthy. The ultra wealthy want to just take Africa out, go in, and just plunder the natural resources of Africa, and doing away building the black population down to a very minimum. And they believe in a one world order, one world government. And they view Africa as, and the Africans as a real problem. So that's what I've gleaned from my studies for years. And that's why I am sympathetic to a large degree with the blacks in this country. Because I see that they're on the hit list. And their roots people, their ancestors in Africa are really on the hit list. And so we need to begin to awaken to some of these bigger issues and come together and work together on these. I remember very vividly that we would attend a series of, say, In the Fed rallies in Houston. And later on, we would learn that there were Army intelligence agents that they filtered throughout the crowd, that they infiltrated into the crowds, that were viewing us and asking us what all kinds of questions about what we were there for, what we believed in, things like that. And so the country is mounting an offense using 9/11. Here's the real bottom line on this. And it's I know many of you out there listening perhaps are not up to speed or whatever. I've studied this for nearly over 30 years now. So when you say the plan, and you say the New World Order, and you say fascism and all this, I really know what these people are really about. And it's a very evil bunch. They're into pedophilia. They're into using people, destroying people. They go for the big money, and nothing stops. They're bloodthirsty, and they're ruthless people. And as a result, they don't care what color you are. If you get in their way, they're gonna do you in. They're like pirates, see, to a large extent. And that's why they act like they do. They go in and plunder whole nations. They don't just mug old ladies on the street anymore. They'll go in and they'll just plunder a whole country. That's what they've been doing with all of these IMF projects and all these World Bank projects. The financial thing is the key. And that's what was happening in Egypt. If you recall, I want you to go in, if you have time, to thesecrettruth.com and read not only the Egyptian plantation, but read the article right below that. And that would be called Turkish Intrigue. And just to tell you a little bit and bring these in on some, and give you a few more angles about what's going on, to give you a little more insight is what we're talking about here, is that Egypt itself, okay, cannot feed itself right now, and it was a breadbasket for centuries. The Nile River Valley It grew all kinds of food there. But for some reason, it's not able to grow the food that Egyptians need. But they're dependent now on some of these foreign loans, so they've got them on the foreign debt, see? And that's how the financiers go in. They'll get a country borrowing and then dependent upon that money and borrowing, and then they're making all kinds of interest. And as a result, they get them dependent on this debt cycle. And then it means that the citizens have to pay for that in some way, and so it gets back to taxation of the citizens. In Turkey, it was a little bit different, and what I was going to say too about Egypt, let's get back there a second, was that it started out where under King Farouk there was the farmers got 25% of the crop, you know, at the end of the harvest, and that wasn't much. And then Nasser did come in and had major land reform, and gave the average farmer a much better deal, and they began to be more productive at that time. In Turkey, the story is a little bit different. In Turkey, because Turkey in modern times came out of World War II and became a member later of NATO, then it began to be tied into the military-industrial complex of America and the Pentagon. And that's what's going on in Turkey today, is that there is a struggle between an Islamic, not a fundamentalist, but you could say a more of an Islamic prime minister struggling against a military-industrial complex that is built up over the years that's primarily manned by the secret society boys, see? So that's what's going on in Turkey. The big picture here, whether we're talking about Muammar Gaddafi or we're talking about Mubarak, former leader of Egypt, or we're talking about Morsi being recently thrown out as the president in a coup d'etat, we're talking about the big picture here. We're schooled at these political schools of science and international affairs, not into the big picture. We're schooled by some kind of a rote. You read, you repeat back like a parrot. It's a parroting system, is what we have in our school systems. They don't teach you how to be free because they don't want anyone to be free. It's a highly intellectualized system of learning and education that does not teach freedom. It's a parroting. It's learning by rote. It's repeating back. It's looking at all of this news that's highly sanitized and favors the big interest. And then everybody can repeat that. And boy, everybody is up on the news, aren't they? And everybody's just repeating all of these little catchphrases that they hear on television, the mainline press. In the last 7 years that we've been on the air, almost 7 years, we're part of the alternative press, the alternative broadcast, the alternative news people. The new news, you could say. And Charlotte Littlefield and I have learned quite a bit. Whenever you're doing this, you're having to do research. And you're having to look at this stuff in depth sometimes, and hours and hours. We might do on a weekend only 2 hours, a two-hour program. But to prepare for that takes at least 5 or 6 hours per or more, probably about 10 hours per hour of broadcast. So we might spend 10, 12, 15, 20 hours just preparing for a two-hour program. Tonight, I was fortunate enough to, on the first hour, to have James Vaughn, Dr. Vaughn, come in. And with his knowledge of the British East India Company, he had a phenomenal grasp and understanding. And the key ideas that we were trying to get across with that program was that the British East India, there were two major, in my own big picture here, we're getting back to the big picture, and I may be jumping around a little bit here, but there is a method here to this so-called madness that I'm exhibiting tonight. And it's called the big picture. And the big picture is to begin to understand and come out of that conditioned state that we find ourselves having been programmed into throughout school and you know, advanced, you know, college and universities. And when you come out of that predisposed, programming, then you begin to see what's really going on. And when the more you come out of that, you know, predisposed state of ignorance is basically what it amounts to, because to be intelligent, to be wise, is to be discerning and to be skeptical and to be questioning of arguments. And that's even your own arguments may not be valid at times because you picked it up from someone else and you didn't think through the whole process properly. So you've got to start questioning, and especially these governments out here, they don't turn out to be good governments. They grow, and in the end, these governments become very evil. I remember attending a meeting years ago, and these people were into government big time, you know, and I told one of them, I said, well, Thomas Jefferson says governments become evil, you know, and he said, well, what do you mean? Government is good, you know, and I said, yeah, government is good, yeah, sure. There's an inherent problem with government, and government is made up of men, and men have a propensity to strive to survive with as little work as possible, I could say, and to live as an opulent life and self-serving, and it's this ego thing. But to look at the big picture, you've got to try to overcome these personal, emotional problems we have. And the first emotional problem that we have is that we think of ourselves as being really, really smart, you know. But when you really begin to examine yourself, and it takes a few setbacks sometimes to where you begin to really question yourself, you know. It takes a little adversity. It takes a few stumbles and falls, and a little bit, you know what I mean, a failure maybe is good for us. I know it's good for us. I've had my failures, but I've come back from those failures, and I've learned, and hopefully I'm a little bit better person than before. We can't think of ourselves as great gods. We got to get off of that deal. We've got to see ourselves as men that have weaknesses, and being a man and having weaknesses, then maybe you can do something about it. You can try to start to overcome, see, this state of madness. And when we say madness, what do we say? We say sociopaths and psychopaths. That's who's at the top of this big pyramid pulling the strings. These people are mad. They are insane, and they have so much money, they think of themselves as great Olympians, and throwing, you could say, lightning bolts down at us, see what I mean? But those lightning bolts may be nuclear bombs they're throwing down at us or something, see? That's the modern thing about it. That's the modern sense. Are not religions then, you know? I mean, we're talking about ideas here, see? Then are not religions contrivances to manipulate us? And the only thing, and I was talking to a friend today at a local restaurant that I frequent, is that we need to overcome this ego state, and we have to do it in some way that we can begin to awaken. See, but. If we start having a few adverse things happen to us and we have a few failures, we begin to question our own judgment, and then that begins to be an examination of ourselves. And when you've done some things, it used to be when I was growing up, if you did something that was shameful, by God, you were shamed. My parents shamed me. When I did something that was ugly and not good for our family or for myself, I got shamed. I'm sorry. Today, we have all these little feelings out here, and we can't hurt their feelings, can we? See, It's totally wrong. It's feeding the wrong dynamic. It's not correcting people. The good book says that we stand to be corrected. We need to correct each other. And when you can accept that correction, then you can grow. And real growth means that you can change this world, much less yourself. You've got to try to come out of this state of delusion and predisposition with all of these different belief systems just swirling around in your head, and you've got it pat down pat. I was talking to people the other day, and they have a certain type of religion, and they've got it down pat. That's it, you know. And if you don't come to their meetings and you don't believe exactly like this one, then you're not going to make it, see. It's just like the other day I was looking at some dispensationalism, see, as an idea. And Timothy LaHaye and Jenkins, Jerry Jenkins, wrote these books called Left Behind series, you know. I mean, they're fictionalized stories about the Middle East and about religion and Christianity. But they say in there, too, that, hey, they believe in the rapture, see. And there's one day where you're going to be driving down the street and come up behind a pickup where the doors are open and the people are gone. They've been raptured, see. We've got to overcome these hustles. We're being hustled by 9/11 myth, is what I call it. They're using mythology on us. The Greeks used mythology on the poor people there. The Romans did the same thing. The churches, the modern churches today, are doing the same thing. There is a cult breaker. There is something that can overcome this slave state, this mind slavery, this thought slavery, and it's called forgiveness. That can break it. That can break their cult system. But you know what? People would rather feel good about trying to get this further learning, that whatever their worldview is, they would rather collect together, open a book, whether it's the good book or something else, and get all of these so-called new insights that they think they're getting, and all they're doing is digging a deeper hole of delusion for themselves. Real forgiveness, real loving thy neighbor, can free you from all of these mechanisms of control. And that's what we have to try to awaken to. You go out here, we have friends that are in all kinds of religions. I'm not saying people are bad because they're religious. I'm just saying that when they're controlled through their religion and it becomes an overwhelming obsession, to where if that religion taught one thing, if you went to a church, for example, here, if you went to a church and just every Sunday they had one piece of advice to give you, and you'd go up there and the minister would stand up and he said, "Everyone forgive one another and others, yourself and others. Now go thee and forgive." If the minister just said that one thing, and we had that in all these churches and all over the world, we'd have a better country than we have now. We have a jumbled mess of people thinking, whether they're atheists, agnostics, or Bible-thumping fanatics, they think they got the inside track on everything. See? They think, well, you just go in and you learn this, and I was brought up in that. Yeah, you're brought up in that and conditioned into it, right? So, but the breaker is the forgiveness, but people won't do it. They won't really forgive because it would dissolve their false self, their ego self. And what they do is that they gain a pleasure and a comfort from thinking about themselves as being some great, knowledgeable, insightful person. That's it. I mean, we go around, we stumble around in the dark, and we memorize things at school by rote. We act as parrots, just parroting stuff in the universities and colleges. We think that political correctness is right on a campus where we have a limited right to even free speech now. You know, even if it's bad, even if it's against the group, you know. I don't care what a person says, they ought to be able to say it anywhere they want to. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that they won't be criticized or castigated by what they say. There'll be people say, hey, get out of here. I don't agree with you. That's okay, too. See? But if you speak your mind, at least these people should have a right to speak, freedom of speech. Then you know what they're thinking. It's when people are quiet, you don't know what they're thinking. That can be dangerous, see? But we have, what, free speech in the country? With all kinds of people on wiretaps and stuff listening to you? The nation of, they created 850 top secret clearances and giving them, handing them out like candy to people. People that are probably 25, 35 years old trying to look and evaluate people like myself. Boy, I tell you what, they look at me, they think I'm the most radical, crazy guy they've ever seen on paper. And they ought to come over and sit down with me and talk to me. I had an interesting experience here recently. I was on a talk show, on a pretty substantial one 3 weeks ago. And I was saying something about men. You know, men are the problem. Well, I went to a meeting recently and one of my acquaintances' friends comes up and said, hey, George, I heard about you bad-mouthing manhood, you know. And I said, well, what are you talking about, you know. And he explained, well, you know, you said this on the show and about men and problem. I said, yeah, I said it because men are the problem, see. When you say this in front of men, you get nothing but defense mechanisms. Now, who's over in Afghanistan fighting on both sides? They're men. Okay, in this recent tragedy in Florida, both you had a young man and you had an older man. They were both men. When you're dealing with the male ego, we got problems, folks. And I had a problem when I was younger. I'm 69 now, and I started coming out of it at about 40 something. I started writing, you know. I started looking at myself and I said, hey man, George, you weren't a very nice person at times. And you did some bad things to people. And, hurt some women down there, you know, along your drinking sprees that you went on. And then I quit in 1970 totally drinking at that time. But, so I had to look back and I had to say, my gosh, I didn't like GB. in doing those kinds of things. So how was I going to approach? I had no one really, no father, when from the late 30s upward, to counsel with me. And I had no father figure that I could seek out to get wisdom. But I finally figured out that it's a kind of wisdom. It's like now sometimes I'll have a topic that I want to talk about, but I have a hard time finding someone that knows, say, the big picture like I was talking about earlier. So I like a generalized big picture, and to dwell on the minutia is not quite my thing. But I begin to see in my late 30s and 40s that I had led a very bad life at times, and I'd hurt people and I'd done some things that I was then ashamed of. My parents brought me up to be ashamed of myself for things I did wrong. Now, politically correct says the feelings that you can't be ashamed because you're hurting their little feelings, aren't you? Huh? Well, that doesn't get it. That does not correct any society along a better path of behavior. How do people find out they're doing wrong unless you correct them and tell them, hey? And there's got to be consequences to our actions. What we have, we've removed consequences in our schools, and we give everybody the little medals that don't deserve anything. We reward mediocrity, and the people that excel, they get a medal too. But everybody gets a medal. It doesn't matter if you did something good or you did something mediocre. You're going to get that medal because you know why we're going to give you that medal? Oh, the people that don't get a medal, it'll hurt their feelings. That is so warped and wrong. See, it builds nothing but a bunch of of egos, false selves and egos, and it built little monsters. That's what we built in the country. We built little monsters out there that want their way. They're spoiled rotten, see? But we weren't spoiled rotten, and I think we got spankings when we deserved them. My dad took the belt to us, you know, and just wore us out, you know. And so we didn't do that anymore. We didn't do things that hurt our mother, that hurt our family, that hurt our father. And we didn't say bad things then. We refrained because, you say bad things again like that and you hurt people, we're going to get a belt on you, you know. That's common sense, folks. Now you just shouldn't touch a child. And I'll tell you what those children are experiencing. They're experiencing a mind, it's almost like mind torture. That's worse, I think, than putting a belt on them when they're real small little babies. And you don't have to hit them. It's not about harming them, hurting them with the belt. It's to reestablish an order here. Look, a family is not a democracy, folks. You know, there's mom and papa, and they're head of the family, and the kids, they're going to mind, or they're going to, you know, bear the responsibilities of not minding. What we have is we have a bunch of kids that were never disciplined and don't mind, and they go out and end up in prison doing anything they want because there's no limits, see? And then they go to school and they'll say, well, through a social and moral relativist view, just do anything, anything goes. Just, yeah, you know, just go out. It feels good. Do it, you know. That's all right, you know. Live life, you know. Feel good. Wait, you know. Take a little dope, you know. And be somebody, you know. Drink a little drink and, oh, go to that sports deal bar and look at that latest little basketball, 2 points. Oh, it's 3 points. It's outside that deal there. It's a long shot. And who cares? It doesn't matter, see. There are people that are dwelling on the wrong things in this world, in this country. We've got to get back to the important issues. 9/11 was a very important issue. It's being used just to take people down in this country and to use people and to make them a slave to that idea. Now we have a series, and I question the series because of these bombings and shootings and things like that, because what it's really close to, from what I can tell, there was a series of secret armies created in NATO, and they became known generally as Gladio armies. And Dr. Ganser out of Switzerland wrote a fine book on the NATO secret armies. And it looks like to me in this country right now that we've got a big problem, folks. And that problem is, I think the NATO Gladio armies, secret armies, or right here, and that doesn't mean that they were farmed outside and attacking us either. It means that these secret operations are underway to create a tension inside America. And this came out, especially in Turkey, it has come out under this new prime minister, because he launched a series of investigations, and these NATO secret armies were there in Turkey creating tension and to create a mechanism to control the people, the public at large. But right now, it's very probable, I'll say, after studying this stuff for about 30 years, the world system and all this, it's very probable right now in America that we are under an attack, a Gladio secret army attack. And usually these are deep, you know what I mean, black operations. And they're actually running shootings and bombings and assassinations of people that really care about the country. And if you get too close to their diabolical system, they'll blow your car up. And like this recent event in California, that Mercedes hit a big old tree and the engine was 150 feet behind it. How did that happen? So we think that there was a bomb in that car. It separated the engine from the car, and it was racing away at a high speed that the driver was not ever seen exceeding those kinds of speed limits. It wasn't natural for him to speed that much. So I believe right now, let's get out there, the listening audience, and start researching this Gladio angle in this country. And I think there's some things that probably already been written out there. I'll try to put something together the next few weeks. But it looks like that we're under an attack, and a Gladio type of an attack, and they're tensioning the country. And every time that they have an attack, whether it's a bombing or a shooting or an assassination, it's terrorism is what it amounts to. And I'm not talking about foreign terrorists doing this either. I'm talking about inside jobs all the way, okay? That's what I see. And I'm not going to lay this on some jihadist and everything. The problem with what is going on right now in America today is that 9/11 was an inside job, in my opinion. I'm a 9/11 truther. So when I first began to uncover that truth, and I believe it is the truth, then they used that inside job to launch attacks against the Afghanistan and Iraq, and then back to Afghanistan. And they've always used that to energize and control the American public. When we started to launch these foreign attacks against these countries, then I believe real jihadists and real terrorism did visit us. And so there are real jihadists today. So what they're doing today is they're describing the real jihadists as something that did the 9/11, which I don't believe happened. See, I don't think real jihadists did 9/11, and there's evidence that David Edger, CIA in Berlin, was monitoring Mohammed Atta in Hamburg. He's actually stated this on an interview, a news interview, and it's very possible that those people were being run by these black operation units and brought into this country at the time. I don't have absolute proof on that. But David Edger today is a lecturer down at the University of Oklahoma. And David Boren today is the president of the University of Oklahoma, who sat as the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, the longest sitting chairman in ages, in years. And he went down there to become president of the University of Oklahoma. And I'm not stating that they're involved in any of this, but there was much of the jihadists, so-called Muhammad Atta and all of them, were seen in the Oklahoma City area. There are some stories written on the internet. If you put Muhammad Atta down there and put Oklahoma City down there, you're going to see a lot of things pop up. In this country, we've had tensioning in the way of the Branch Davidian attack. We've seen the Murrah building blown up. We've seen, of course, later on 9/11, which was a tremendous false flag operation, inside operation, in my opinion. So I believe that we're seeing an ongoing Gladio secret army attack on America. And what it's doing is it's propelling America into a greater statist, centralized government, more of a national security state type of government. And that's why the people are being scared and being terrorized into accepting a greater security and surveillance level. And the actual surveillance and the security level is aimed at those people that are owned to this money system. And I've been studying this money system for years, and that is a real problem. And to have a Federal Reserve privately owned, and Bernanke saying that we need to still pump up the Fed, and where do those credits go? There's $70 to $80 billion a month going to who? We learned last time that there were international financial banks that got most of the money. So this is what it's about. The New World Order has instituted a surveillance system for America to destroy those people that are against their money system, and that are true American patriots, by the way, also. So if you're a true American patriot and you believe in the gun rights and the right to keep and bear arms, and you believe in free speech, you believe in the 10, you know, Bill of Rights and all the other freedoms inherent in those, then they're going to label you as a patriot as a conspiracy nut or an extremist or an anti-government person. In doing that, then they're going to start coming after us. And that's where this resembles Nazi Germany to a large extent, because they started identifying those people that would not go along with the government and were and became actually anti-government. And so in the German naval and fog and naval was the fog and night and fog, Nacht und Nebel, was the Nazi terrorist movement against those people. They just picked them up at night and didn't tell the family where they were going with them and put them in the prison camps where a lot of them died. But Nacht und Nebel was the night and fog with the program the Nazis instituted. And this NDAA and all these people watching over our shoulder, there are some people in Congress that are standing up to this. And by gosh, you better stand up stronger, and there ought to be more of you out there. Ron Paul stood up against a lot of this stuff a lot of the time and most of the time. And we've just got to stand up and be counted. And the Federal Reserve is privately owned. We need to get rid of it. We need to bring it under the Treasury again, the power of money creation. And we need to put that back into the hands of the people. And but right now, the American public is not awake. They're not being clued in on 9/11 even. It's disheartening to see the mesmerized, delusional, masses out there, the general public, not waking up to some of these real issues. And I invite the liberal Democrats and I invite the blacks out there to come in and start studying these subjects and these issues and helping us trying to establish a free America. Much less, we've got to break this hold on Africa. AFRICOM and all that. That's all that is to destroy your formerly home country. So I'm bespeeching to the blacks to, hey, wake up and begin to see what these people are really all about. And they're out to destroy Africa and plunder its natural resources. That's what the attack in Libya was the beginning of. And so we're not going to see any good come out of this. Anyway, we're coming to the end of our program. Go into thesecrettruth.com and read those articles that we've written. We're going to have these programs up here pretty soon. And so come in and we'll be broadcasting live on the air these programs tomorrow at 7 to 9. We've been recording on Friday and broadcasting on Saturday. But thank you for listening, and we certainly appreciate all the help. And hey, hang in there. There is hope out there. And you can do it if you begin to forgive yourself and others and love one another and love your neighbor as yourself. And we can turn this country into a new nation, a nation of forgiving, a nation that can be mended and can be healed. And perhaps once again we can recover this nation, a great American nation for all men, no matter your color, your ethnic group, or whatever. And we can truly make remake America into what the Founding Fathers were trying to do originally. But thank you very much for listening, and good night, and good luck out there, and God bless each and every one of you. Good night.